This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is hour number two of Sharp Money as we welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick the rest of the week. Jared Smith next to me. We've got a few patrons hanging out. They did fix the Sigma Derby machine, which you will see on the very edge of the screen momentarily. Wyatt Tomchek, our producer here as well, and we are tracking, even though there's not a ton of people here yet, we're tracking a lot of really good live action, including a couple of day baseball games in MLB. Euro 2024, Jared, it is 1-1 at the half. Your 2.5 under is still live, as the Netherlands and England have made it to halftime. What I find interesting, though, is how the halftime odds really heavily shaded toward England here, at least in the two advance market. England went off about $1.30 favorite. Netherlands was even money. It's now England minus 170, Netherlands plus 130. And if you're asking yourself, why would there be a 40-cent gap when it was 1-1? Now, the expected goals right now in the stats, Jared, paint a picture of dominance by England that really counter the first 7 minutes of what Netherlands did with the early goal. 1.12 XG to 0.15. 7 shots to 3 for England, 4 on target to 1 for the Dutch. And you just now basically hope that the Netherlands go with the park the bus strategy here, just try to get this thing into extra time and find a way to nab one against the run of the play and take down England.
I think that would be my strategy if I was the Netherlands. I think the Netherlands have been dangerous here, but they've been more dangerous on the counter than anything else, right? It was that quick turnover and then the goal, which was just a firecracker of a strike. I think on the other side for England, they're very comfortable being uncomfortable in this tournament. So I wouldn't expect anything overly daunting from them because I think they're very comfortable taking this to extra time and penalties. But I'm sure both. I think the first 5 minutes is very telling here. You said the live total is still 3.5, heavily juiced to the under. I said 5 minutes into the second half, that's when that number is going to switch. I think if we don't get the early goal in the second half, I think the second half becomes more conservative as we get closer to extra time. So, again, if we don't get that early, and I said, I wouldn't be shocked. 1-1, just like yesterday after we got those three crazy goals in the opening 25 minutes or so. I said I wouldn't be shocked if Spain parked the bus, which is what they're so good at doing, and just grind this game out like a boa constrictor, and that's exactly what they did. 2-1 was the final. England and Netherlands, I think a little more volatility because of just it's an even match right now, so the next goal will win, whereas Spain had that definitive strategy. It's kind of in that, you know, walking the tightrope, I think, for the first few minutes of the second half. But as we get past that initial wave and things settle in, 1-1, like if you get under 2.5 plus money, let's say at like the 55th, 60th minute mark, yeah, I think that's kind of the time there. Because to me, 1-1 still very, very much in play here.
It is. Draw the favorite right now at plus 120.
There you go.
Speaks to your thoughts, Jared. And you can at DraftKings. There are ladders of totals you can bet. You could bet 2.5 if you wanted to jump in front of that. You get plus 205 on the
I'd under. Wait because the first 5 minutes, I think there's some uncertainty there. But then again, I think once we get past that initial nerviness of the start of the second half, I think that's when things calm down.
Yeah, under 3.5 right now at minus 230. We also have day baseball going on. I'm more fascinated anytime the White Sox have a lead, Jared, simply because they're a top five ROI first five team, and then by far the worst team in baseball if you were betting Chicago full games. It is a historically bad bullpen. Right now the Twins are about a 6-1 dog, down 3-1 in the top of the eighth after a very good Eric Fetty start today for the White Sox. It's just one of those things as a bettor when you have such an anomaly like that. We are naturally so inclined to be obsessed with, and here we go in an otherwise snooze fest of day baseball. You can never snooze if you are a White Sox better full game, or if you are a under better full game, even though the under looks to be rock solid right now.
What a weird place. So I'm like, to me, when you go to a baseball stadium, or even if you're just watching a baseball game on TV, you will see something you've never seen every game. I'm convinced. Here it was for the White Sox game. The catcher for the White Sox almost knocked the pitcher, John Brebbia, off of his spot trying to make the throw to first. Now, it didn't matter because he got a pop-up on the next play, but I've never seen a catcher interfere with his own pitcher trying to throw to first base before.
Haven't the White Sox had, like, just any which way to lose a game?
Oh, yeah.
They lose.
The Rockies are on that list, too. You know who's been better recently has been the Marlins. They've actually played a little bit better than I think a lot of people expected over the last month or so.
Now, I would say there are a number of perceived bad teams that have actually played totally Oakland. Okay baseball. The Angels come
Angels,
to mind.
Yeah.
And also, if you're going on the flip side here, teams that are sneaky as far as finding ways to lose would be the Chicago Cubs, who are as poorly...
NL Central's a disaster.
...poorly fundamentally disciplined as any team I have seen this year. The division, though, is very interesting. Twins now, by the way, 11-1 to come back and win after John Brebbia. Shout out John Brebbia, who's been terrible this year, gets out of the eighth inning. But the NL Central really tightening up, Jared. That's now a four-game gap after the Brewers lose last night handily to the Pirates 12-2. Cardinals four back. They're playing a doubleheader today, so there's a chance where St. Louis could get to within 2.5 if they sweep that doubleheader and the Brewers lose. Fortunately for Brewer future backers, the Royals with a 5 unanswered run stretch here, down 3-1. They now take a 6-3 lead into the ninth to try and prevent that from happening. But it also speaks to how, with this current iteration of Major League Baseball, there's really only a couple of teams at the very top that you feel are bulletproof. And we've seen teams like the Mariners, the Brewers, really come back down to earth from leading their division to now sweating it out here as we go into the second half.
The Dodgers and Padres have lost 5 in a row combined. You've got the Phillies, who are getting healthy but have been maligned by injuries after an unbelievable first half. You have the Brewers that have kind of tied it together with Elmer's glue and bubble gum for the first 60 days.
Haven't used that
with
since
their
fourth
rotation.
Grade.
And we talked about it off air. I think that's why they felt the need to go out and get Savali, because they saw Tobias Myers maybe hit a wall. We've seen Peralta kind of struggle a little bit. Colin Ray last night just kind of melted down. Like, these guys have pitched way above the back of their baseball cards for 3 months, and now you can start to see the league catch up. That's why they felt the need. I think they might even need one more starter. You look like you want to chime in on your Brewers here, so please go ahead.
I'm not a Brewers fan. I'm a Braves
that's
fan.
Right. Every time I see Milwaukee now, I just feel like you're
I know. I know. I'm all over the map
the
here.
Because when you think Wyatt and, you know, being 30 years old or younger,
did you have
think,
a Brewers point?
You
though?
Think Milwaukee Braves.
Milwaukee Braves.
Milwaukee Braves, who did get Milwaukee. It's only a World Series championship. I like to rub that into my uncle's face when he likes to talk smack about the
Braves.
Sure,
your uncle loves that.
Anyway, we have a good back and forth.
That's good.
I wasn't about the Brewers, but it was about you mentioned the Phillies. How concerned are you about the Dodgers? They got smacked
I'm not
yesterday.
Concerned about the Dodgers. I'm more concerned about the Yankees. I know we talked to Burke yesterday, and he wasn't as concerned with the Yankees. I watched this team very closely. The pitching is not good. The starting pitch. Now, Gerrit Cole could come back and be an ace in the second half. I think that makes things better. But we got the best out of Rodon, Cortez, and Stroman in the first half. Those guys have been not consistent. Cortez a little more consistent. The other guys have not been consistent over the last decade. I know you've seen good stuff from Stroman. I know you've seen good stuff from Rodon. But these are not guys that I trust. And I think the offense is Aaron Judge. And, you know, Juan Soto was good. But that's kind of it. You need Stanton. You need Rizzo back. You need another starter. I think the bullpen's okay, but not great. Actually, no, I think the bullpen might be the strength of their team. I think Holmes is solid. The rest of the bullpen's been pretty
good.
Hey,
how about Brian Cashman? I mean, he's there all of a sudden, which is sound the alarm bells. GM, it's always funny too, Jared, when it's like when the GM wants the press and wants everybody to know he's there, but he's like, oh, no, I'm just hanging out. Everything's okay. Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Just give a heads up. For the as I mentioned, the Dodgers, they are sending Bobby Miller back down to AAA. I think it's over 8 ERA.
Yeah.
My phone died on me while I had the notification up. Yeah, 8.07 ERA this year.
The bullpen for the Dodgers has been disgusting. They're a bottom 5 expected FIP over the last 30 days, and they're not getting anything from their starters now. Bobby Miller didn't make it out of the fourth inning yesterday? Buehler has not come back and bounce back. They're getting great starts from guys like Landon Knack and Gavin Stone. I mean, this is the freaking Dodgers we're talking about here, and they're bringing up guys from AAA and, you know, not major league starters to fill a decent amount of innings in their rotation. Like, yeah, I think there's cause for concern, but I think I'm more concerned about the Yankees because I think the Yankees' offense is razor thin, and it relies too much on one player. The Dodgers have a much deeper lineup. And I think if they can figure out a way to get through this rough patch with their rotation, and the bullpen has to figure it out, that's probably the biggest concern with the Dodgers. Because I always say, if you don't have a bullpen, you're not winning in October. And if their bullpen's going to pitch like it has the last month or so, they're going to be out early in
October. They've been in a stretch, too, where you could argue Gavin Stone has been the most reliable starting pitcher. That's probably not a good sign if you're trying to be a World Series contender. I would say Alex Vezia has probably been the most reliable reliever.
And Glasnow's now on the IL. There you go. Glasnow on the IL. Miller gets sent down. AAA this, AAA that. Like, it does feel like there's probably more concern there than there should be. But also the thing you have to consider is that division's not good. The second team in the division's three games over 500, unlike the American League East, where the Orioles look like they could run away with it, I think the Dodgers can play 500 baseball for the next month and still win the division.
Yeah, Dodgers just called up Justin Robleski, a top left-handed pitching prospect who got he wasn't bad, but he got drilled by the Brewers in his big league debut over the weekend. Just looking at the remaining strength of schedules here.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Dodgers, even though you would think because of the strength of the AL East, Dodgers would have an easier schedule than the Yankees. That's actually not the case. Dodgers, a 14th hardest in strength of schedule. Yankees, 19th.
No, it's not a huge gap there. I think it's just the division being what it is. Like, the Dodgers know they can call up guys from AAA. They can give guys like Buehler and Glasnow a rest. They can buy time. Arizona's underachieved this year. They're two under 500. San Diego, I don't know what's going on. The Padres roster should be good enough to be better than three over 500 after basically 100 games, but they're not. They've got a 7.5 game lead in a division, 9 in the loss column. The Dodgers are not, like, that's why if I'm a Dodgers fan or even if I'm, you know, Dave Roberts, like, what are you concerned about? They could literally lose 7 games in a row and still be in first place, and they're guaranteed to be in first place when we get to the All-Star break. I think there's obviously red flags, but to me, the Yankees, because of who's in their division, much tougher sure. road looking uphill at Baltimore.
And it's why it is still a, to me, Jared, a good bet to make. Guardians, Yankees, Orioles battling for that number one seed in the AL. You can still get the Orioles at plus 135.
I bet the Orioles last week at plus 155 to win the division. It might be one of the better bets I've made in the last year.
They've moved to a significant favorite. See if that continues to come back at all. But Baltimore with a lead now on the Yankees in that division. We'll talk more baseball later as far as breaking down today's slate. But up next, back to the NFC North as our NFL previews continue with the Chicago Bears right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you have to be a VSIN Pro subscriber, and for a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199 instead of our usual $240 annual price, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this fantastic offer. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe, use promo code SHARP, and get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 and gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. Back on Sharp Money, where we will talk a lot of NFC North here, rest of the show. First, though, an update from Euro 2024. The Netherlands and England 1-1 into the 56th minute. Jared Smith starting to feel a little bit more live as each passing second ticks
like
upward on the soccer clock. That under 2.5.
Bring the sand down through the hourglass.
Look at Mr. He's got like the soft hang jacket on today. He's
oh,
Mr.
Yeah, I feel
Chill.
Very suede. The bomber jacket. I get a lot of compliments.
Yeah, 119 yeah. yesterday wearing a jacket.
I'm not wearing it outside, you dullard.
Dullard. I've never heard that one before.
We're indoors. It's air conditioning. Yeah. I would never wear this outside right now. No, I would turn into a
dullard. Call him a bloke while you're at it. You're making
dullard. I love dullard. It's like kind of a smart way to call someone stupid. It is. I love it. It's sorry. You're not stupid, but you obviously know, we're just joking. You know,
I've never heard of dullard. That makes me think of mallard.
A mallard with a cold.
What's you know who I call people stupid since I'm a Green Bay Packer fan? A Chicago Bear fan.
Great transition.
There's our
transition. See, he's not a dullard. He's off the dullard list.
Sorry,
Ryan
medics.
Tomchick. Fire up that private jet as a co-owner of the Packers.
Hey, the White Sox won a game.
Chicago Bears. Good for the White Sox. 3-1. They beat the Twins in the first of a double dip today. White Sox 3-1. Eric Fetty, not a bad pitcher.
No.
As that game stays well to the under. And the Kansas City Royals also get the job done. 6-4 over the St. Louis Cardinals. That is a big help in the NL Central race as the Cardinals slip back now 4.5 behind the Milwaukee Brewers. A big help, I should say, if you're betting Milwaukee out there in the futures market. We'll go here to the NFC North right now since Wyatt set us up beautifully with that transition, and then we just happened to notice some baseball finals. But it is the Chicago Bears, a team that has gotten, I wouldn't say it's universal hype, Jared. There has been, I would say, pretty equal measures of pushback to potential success for Caleb Williams as the new starting quarterback in year number one. But it is a team that seems to have
a lot of conjecture on it, and a very polarizing group as a whole. 8.5, the win total, third favorite in the division. Which side of that aisle do you find yourself on, Jared, as you started the breakdown on the Bears?
Well, obviously we like the defense. I think that's what, to me, the Caleb Williams stuff, number one pick. I know there's a lot of excitement, Keenan Allen, Adunze, all the offensive pieces. This is a defensive team, first. This is the monsters of the Midway. You go look at the defense at the end of last season was playing at a top 10 level. Do I think they can sustain that this year? Borderline. I think it's fair to expect this to be a top half defense in the NFL. That's a fair expectation. Now we go to the offense. Rookie quarterback, new OC, a lot of new pieces. I don't think it's just going to snap your fingers and he's going to look like, you know, Caleb Williams, Heisman Trophy winner. Like, I don't think it's going to be that easy. It's rarely as easy as it was for C.J. Stroud like last year. I think the variables are different. I think the Bears play in a much tougher division than the Texans do. So winning the division's much tougher. There was not a Detroit Lions NFC Championship caliber team in the AFC South last year for the Texans to contend with. They really had one contending team, Jacksonville, who underachieved. It's a much tougher road to hoe with the Bears this year because they play in a much more difficult conference. The irony is they'll get to see C.J. Stroud right out of the gates in week two after they play Tennessee at home in week one. Best case scenario, Caleb Williams shows out in week one. They're a home favorite, a pretty big one, frankly, 4.5. That's a pretty big number for a rookie quarterback making his first start with a new OC. I will say that. But they are expected to win that game. But then, let's be honest, things get pretty tough. I could honestly see them starting 1-3. So I think that game against the Colts is the toss-up, but they're a dog. They're a dog to the Rams. They're a slight favorite to the Rams. They're a dog at the Colts, dog at the Texans. And then they have that, of course, game against Carolina at home, which you would expect them to win. But let's just say, worst case scenario, they lose that game week one. Like, it's not out of the question. First start for a rookie quarterback week one, you're not going to get the best stuff. And Will Levis, they've got some moxie. I know they've got a new head coach and a whole bunch of new pieces there in Tennessee. But that week one game is kind of a must win. Because if they start 0-1 in a game that they're favored in, then they go on the road Sunday night to the Texans, they start 0-2, then all of a sudden at Houston or at Indy week three, they might be calling for Caleb's job if the struggles continue right out of the gate. I think that's the extreme case, but my point being, it's not a layup. And I know there's very high expectations in Chicago right now, but I still think they're at best the third best team in this division.
You also ask yourself, what is the optimal first 6-week start ahead of a week 7 bye week? When you figure that the most of that transition, to your point, Jared, will be happening for a rookie quarterback, 3-3 to me seems to be about the ceiling. Like, you take care of your home games against the Titans, the Panthers, you steal one between Houston, Indy on the road, the Rams at home, and the Jaguars in a neutral site game at London. But I don't see you winning more than one of those four against, at the very least, above average teams. And in pretty difficult situational spots as well, with two of those on the road, one a full across the pond trip there to London. So 3-3, at least, that's to me the best case scenario for Chicago. That at least keeps you competitive, and you get some very winnable games directly out of your bye week, including a home date with a New England, and you also get another young rebuilding team in the Commanders, albeit on the road. But it's not a good sign, right, when it's like, okay, best case scenario, we go 3-3 into a bye week, and then we figure it out from there. Now, granted, this is a team that started so poorly last year, 0-4, finished great around the stretch, but I guess to me, Jared, it's pushing back on the narrative that this offense was just completely miserable. They couldn't move the ball whatsoever. And that bringing in quarterback Caleb Williams will be such a big upgrade that they now automatically become a team that is going to be live to make the playoffs. Last year, the Bears actually moved the ball pretty well. They were 14th in average yards per drive on offense. Justin Fields was 21st in completion percentage over expectation plus EPA per play. He was not a bottom 10 quarterback, despite what the modern narrative of media will tell you. Now, the Bears still on a yards per play basis were down at 23rd. I'm not saying this was a great offense by any means, but to paint it as a picture of, okay, just completely anemic and Williams being the savior, it's not totally accurate. I mean, they weren't all that horrible last year. It was blown leads. It was bad timing with turnovers and a defense that, while was good for the most part, did struggle to close out games.
I think anytime you have a new offensive coordinator, there's a veil of secrecy around a team. And it's almost impossible for us to know what the vibe is going to be. Now, you could also say that teams that keep their offensive coordinator but go through massive personnel shifts will also change their scheme as well. But we, I think, have both things happening here. We have new quarterback, new OC. It's a lot of unknowns. And I think when you're betting unknowns, there's room for upside, downside. I would say we were feeling very confident, Lions, Packers, top two. I think the Bears are that swing team. I do think if the Bears go over, I think they have a chance to, you know, really surprise to the upside. Now, the numbers move considerably, but I'd be interested what over 9.5 wins would be for Chicago. They're favored in 10 games, so I'd be interested in what over 9.5 wins are for Chicago. And on the flip side, if things go south, for example, let's say they start 1-3, I'd be interested in what under 7.5 wins would be too. Like, it feels like this isn't going to be 8 or 9. I think it's either going to be a high, like a C.J. Stroud kind of year, or it's going to be an Anthony Richardson kind of year. Like, it feels like it's going to be one or the other. Caleb either performs super high to the upside and outperforms all the expectations. The Bears make the playoffs, they win 10 games. Or he really struggles, new offense. Keenan Allen gets hurt. The running game's ineffective. The defense is barely hanging on by a thread, and this is a 6 or 7-win team. Because let's be honest, they play in a very difficult division. I know Minnesota's going through quarterback problems, but they have a very good head coach and a very good supporting cast. I could very much see Chicago being the fourth team in this division.
And they are in a team where we figure 3-3 is about the best case scenario for the first 6 games, and we're fourth in the division is a total reality, considering it is, as we just laid out with those offensive stats from last year, Jared, it's not a guarantee that Caleb Williams and this new look offense is automatically better immediately than what the offense was, as frustrating as it was for Bears bettors a season ago. But for a team to be minus 120 to make the playoffs with all those question marks, I think you're right. You'd much rather take a shot at an alt win total over, if you believe, yeah, which is plus 190 to the over 10.5. I wouldn't go crazy and bet a division winner price at plus 265.
No, they're not winning this division. I don't think that's happening.
To sit there and say, well, we figure this should land right in the middle and go, let's just kind of gamble and take a make the playoffs at minus 120. To me, that is a bet that really isn't getting you much value either way.
I think the other thing that's mispriced here is the Caleb Williams Rookie of the Year odds. He shouldn't be that big of a favorite over Jaden Daniels. I don't see that big of a gap between those two guys. Don't get me wrong, Caleb Williams could win this award very easily, but to make him that big of a favorite at this stage of the proceedings is just, you're just giving him the respect of being the number one pick.
It's asking a lot.
It is asking
Chicago.
A lot.
We'll get the local breakdown, what Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic is seeing early on from OTAs and being close to the sun there in Chicago. Kevin joins us next as we wrap up our Chicago Bears season preview on the other side. We'll also get you an update from Euro 2024. We'll talk some more Major League Baseball and Wimbledon as the show continues right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our homepage, VSIN.com, I'm opening up my laptop and I see Zach Cohen breaking down both women's semifinals in tomorrow's Wimbledon on the ladies' draw. Zach set to join us in about 45 minutes, VSIN senior editor. Also, we have MLB betting splits and best bets for the rest of the card for both Josh Applebaum as well as Adam Burke, and Scottish Open best bets from our Wes Reynolds as the Long Shots crew has a fresh pot out right now. You get all that along with betting splits, articles, odds by state, tools, and betting guides at VSiN.com. Optimized for mobile or on your laptop. As I'm Ben Wilson, Jared Smith sitting next to me. Euro 2024 into the 71st minute, still 1-1. Jared is like, all right, let's just not talk about that. Get to the 90-minute whistle and cash
the
a ticket.
The match is not even happening right now.
There's nothing happening. It doesn't exist. No point in even mentioning it. We'll just move on. We continue our NFC North breakdown, though. Good discussion for us here in the last segment about the Chicago Bears, the preseason third favorite out of the four-team NFC North. And to get some more close-to-the-sun breakdown on them in, very close to what's going on inside the building in Chicago, we go out to our progressive guest line and welcome in Kevin Fishbane, who joins us from The Athletic, outstanding beat reporter there for the Chicago Bears. As Kevin joins us right now, you follow him at K Fishbane. Thanks so much for joining us, Kevin. I think the big question everybody's wondering, even though we have the rookie portion reporting to training camp here in a few days, it's what have been the early returns from people you talked to close to the building and inside the locker room about what Caleb Williams has looked like from a leadership and early playbook grasping perspective here through OTAs.
Yeah, I think all returns have been pretty positive with him. You hear it publicly, you hear it privately. I think he's confident and he knows how to play the position, and he knows how to play the position at a pretty high level. You know, this is a little bit new for the Bears to have a rookie quarterback start with the ones right away. And I think Caleb Williams definitely benefiting from that. But yeah, you heard it from players, you heard it from coaches. I mean, they just were really impressed with everything he's shown them in the spring. And, you know, look, the tests will keep coming, and it's going to be his own defense in training camp. It'll start with the Titans in week one and so on and so forth. I think it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster because that's what happens with a rookie quarterback, even one who is as physically gifted as Caleb Williams. But if you're just want to, you know, just on the simple check, you know, boxes to check, he's checked all of them since he got here.
Kevin, I think the bigger question I have, I feel confident that Caleb Williams is the right man for the job. I don't think they would have chosen him at one unless they felt that way. I'm more interested in Shane Waldron's offense and what he brings over from Seattle and kind of how this offense is going to look. Because, right, it's a new rookie quarterback. It'd be one thing if that quarterback was coming into an established system with an OC that's been there for a long time and he was trying to adapt what was already in place. But it kind of seems like, to me, Shane Waldron has a blank canvas here because you can maybe design an offense suited to what Caleb Williams does best. What has been your early vibe with the offensive coordinator in town, and what kind of offense do you think the Bears are going to run this year?
Yeah, you know, you laid it out well, because there's a positive and negative to having a brand new OC with Caleb Williams. He can start over. He can start new with Williams and Taylor's offense, so everyone's on the same page. On the flip side, you know, it wasn't just Caleb Williams learning the new offense. We were out there in May and June. It was DJ Moore learning the new offense. It was, you know, it was Cole Kmet learning the new offense. And then you have a bunch of new players out there too, and Keenan Allen and Gerald Everett and DeAndre Swift, a couple of new centers as well. So, you know, we haven't seen a ton yet of what this offense is going to look like. One thing I kind of like about it from a rookie quarterback standpoint is it's going to highlight the tight ends. It's going to highlight the run game. If you look at Seattle, you know, they ran the ball well and they got the tight ends involved. The Bears have a couple pretty good tight ends. And what is a rookie quarterback's best friend? A big 6'6" guy that's open over the middle. You know, what's another rookie quarterback's best friend? A guy you can hand the ball off to who's going to get 4 or 5 yards of carry, and they hope they have that in DeAndre Swift. So, you know, it's a good point, though, because I think when you break down this team, you know, you can look at this roster and say, yeah, there's a lot of talent here. This is as talented a group or number one pick a quarterback has had, maybe ever. It's as talented the Bears roster has been since they won the division in 2018. But, you know, the ultimate kind of caveat with all that is you don't really know necessarily how good of a play caller Shane Waldron's going to be. You still can certainly have question marks about Matt Eberflus as head coach. So the roster is there. You know, it still got a couple of holes to fill on both lines. But the coaching staff is kind of what's going to be, not necessarily what holds it back, but I think it's the thing that we're all kind of wondering about heading into the season.
Kevin Fishbane with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line, talking Chicago Bears season outlook on Sharp Money. 8.5 the win total. That is juiced to the over. Expectations based on the betting market, a 9-win team here for Chicago. And you talk about all those moving parts and the adjustments here from a coaching perspective, Kevin. We were just talking about first 6 games out of the chute before week 7 bye for Chicago. What do you feel like, breaking down that and considering the adjustment period that will come, is the ceiling and the floor for what the Bears record will look like after they get through that first 6 game stretch?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting way that the schedule has been, you know, as you said, kind of given to Williams and to this team, because you're starting out with teams that aren't necessarily scaring you. The Titans and Will Levis and new coach aren't scaring you. Yes, that trip to Houston is going to be a tough one in week 2. But, you know, you go on, you've got the Colts and a young quarterback. The Rams are kind of reworked. You got Bryce Young. You got Trevor Lawrence and Jaguars. It's certainly not murderer's row, and they get, you know, the tougher teams, and certainly you guys, you know, said at the top, they're third in their division right now, and a lot of those teams come in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, I look at that, like, shoot, you know, can you get to 4-2? Can you be 3-3 coming out of those first 6 games? I think I'm trying to figure out, like, yes, they're favored in week 1. They'll be favored against Carolina. They'll probably be favored against Jacksonville, assuming things haven't gone off the rails. You know, the Rams game might be really close, like a pick 'em. So you could say, like, hey, win the game you're supposed to win, and you could be a 4-2 team at the bye. But, you know, every comment that I'm trying to make about this team has to come with the asterisk of, this is a rookie quarterback. Rookie quarterbacks just struggle. it is a challenge. I believe if you go back in the last 12 years, you look at the number one and number two picks who have been a quarterback, only one guy has won double-digit games, and that was Andrew Luck. So even the best rookie quarterbacks just have their challenges. So I think if you can get out of there 3-3, 4-2, you're feeling really good because the second half of the schedule gets pretty challenging.
Yeah, 3-3 seems fair. We were going through it a little bit earlier, Kevin. Basically a pick'em against the Jags in London. Basically a pick'em at home against the Rams. They're a slight dog at Indy, relatively bigger dog at Houston, and then the two teams that they're favored against, of course, Carolina, Tennessee at home. You would think the floor is 2-4. Like, if they're not 2-4 heading into the bye, that to me is the worst case scenario. I think 3-3 is a very fair projection after those first six games. And I think the early bye definitely helps Caleb Williams. Let's flip the narrative to the other side, because I'll be honest, you feel really good about the Bears defense. They were kind of a fringe top 10 unit back half of last year. Can they continue that? And will the defense, because of all the rookie question marks you have at quarterback, will this need to be a monsters of the midway type of team for Chicago to really accomplish their goals this season?
Well, it would certainly help. You know, I think you go back. I mentioned that 2018 team, and that 2018 defense was, and you looked at some of the numbers, they were historic in some ways. I mean, they did things that defenses hadn't done in a long time, and that helped Mitch Trubisky a lot. You know, Mitch went to the Pro Bowl that year, and the offense had benefited greatly from that defense. You know, this year's group, certainly the offense is better than that year's group. I think the defense, you know, on the one hand, it's hard to replicate takeaways. And you mentioned the back half of the year, top five, top 10 in a lot of different categories. And a lot of that was because they were just taking the ball away at a really high rate. The other thing, though, if you look at their numbers, they were still one of the worst teams in the league at sacking a quarterback. Mm. So maybe the turnover luck comes back a little bit. Maybe that regresses. But on the flip side, they're going to be better bet rushing the passer just because they've got Montez Sweat, who's now had a full offseason, who understands the playbook, and his coaches understand how to employ him. You got Jervon Dexter, the three technique, going into year two, and they feel really good about him. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in another defensive end at some point in the next month or so. You know, it depends kind of what they think of what they have. But that is an area where they can improve, and they should improve. And you look at the back half. I mean, I think you look at the back seven guys, linebackers and DBs, I'd put that back seven up against any group in the league. I mean, I think they've got two of the best off-ball linebackers in football. I think Jalen Johnson proved himself as a top five corner in the game. I think Kyle Gordon is a name. Keep an eye on him as, you know, when you get into December, he could be somebody getting Pro Bowl a consideration for what he does in the nickel. There's a lot to like about that defense. And the other thing, too, is it's pretty young. And the old guy is Kevin Byard, who should be an upgrade over Eddie Jackson, who, you know, had great moments with the Bears but struggled with injuries towards the end, just wasn't the playmaker he was. You bring in Byard, who has been a really good player in his career, can kind of be a leader back there. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be pretty excited about that defense. Again, you kind of have to temper things with the takeaways, but they should be able to improve in a few categories as well.
Kevin Fishbane with us here on Sharp Money. At K Fishbane covers the Bears for The Athletic. Outstanding spot here, Kevin. Thanks so much, man, for the time. We really appreciate it.
All right, take care, guys.
When we return, Jared Smith had his heartbeat a little bit faster than normal because the English team scored, but it was disallowed due to offsides. We'll update you on Euro 2024. Talk little Copa America, huge match tonight, and also Wimbledon. We have to break down some matches going on tomorrow when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back on Sharp Money, where we thank Kevin Fishbane for joining us, breaking down the Chicago Bears in the NFC North. We'll get back into the NFC North in a little bit with the Minnesota Vikings. We've also got a really good final hour coming up here. Zach Cohen will join us, VSIN.com senior editor, to break down the Wimbledon with a semifinal now set. On the women's side, we'll have our final two quarters on the men's side tomorrow. Actually, we do have the semis now for the men's, and we'll have some semifinals on Friday there for the men. Women's semis tomorrow. So we're down to the final four.
I was about to say, Ben.
Each of the respective groups.
Oh. I was about to say, you scared me. I thought I screwed up my graphic.
Oh, no, you didn't. You're okay. I just wanted to make sure why.
Do we have any, also, are you a tennis guy?
No.
Okay.
Right. That's why you can get.
That's why he almost screwed up the draft.
Summer league breakdown too with Jared Smith and Zach Cohen.
I mean, have as much summer league as Zach does. I'm more of a, like, if this was a game of T-ball, Zach was the hitter, I would be the T.
You would put it on the T.
I would. Yeah.
That's
I'm
what
basically
we're here
the
for.
T.
You know, Zach Cohen in a half hour, then Mackenzie Brooks from CBS Sports in 45 minutes. So good final hour 15 here on the show.
I was telling you guys about some of the cool summer league moments that I've had, you know, working it and being a fan, going to the game at the Cox Pavilion with Giannis, Jabari Parker, Anthony Bennett, and Andrew Wiggins. That was a good one. The most memorable one I forgot was the earthquake. You guys remember that when Zion was playing?
In Vegas. That's right.
There was the earthquake. Now that you mentioned it, yeah, I vaguely remember that. But what were the details?
I was working the event. I was working the laundry for the event. And
working laundry for the event.
Hey, man.
You got to sniff LeBron's jockstrap. That's pretty awesome.
Whatever you got to do to get your foot in the door.
Oh,
I love it.
That's great cash, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Is it really? I'm unaware. I don't know that.
It's a great payday.
Wow.
But
just smell, a little bit smelly, but you get used to it.
I mean, I would do it. I'd do a lot for money.
Anywho, so I was down below in the Mendenhall Center, which is where UNLV's men's basketball, that's a practice facility. So you were underneath, and I was putting stuff in the dryer. I was walking back, and all of a sudden, people are like, "Do you feel that? It's an earthquake." I'm like, "No." So I was completely,
you didn't feel anything?
I was completely oblivious that we just had an earthquake.
And I don't remember. When was it?
2019.
I wasn't living here.
Was it 2019?
I wasn't living here yet.
I think it was.
I was not in Vegas at that summer league. I remember. I moved about 3 months after that. Is it one of those things, Wyatt? Tomczyk, he's a man of all ilks, despite being technically colorblind. We've talked about this on the show.
Oh, wow.
Does being colorblind automatically mean that you cannot feel earthquakes? Is there a correlation there?
Oh,
I've never heard anything like that. So I'll have to Google that here at the break.
Colorblindedness plus lack of earthquake feeling.
I mean, maybe it was because I was down below, in the basement.
Okay.
Quote unquote.
It's just a question. I wouldn't think there would be a connection.
We're getting to the point in
maybe
this
I'm
Euro
just
match.
Built different.
You are
if
built.
We
hey,
get,
why? Built,
if we get a goal different. Here in the final minute or two.
1-1, 89th minute, and there have been a couple of good chances here since the subs have started to come on. Really,
that
the Netherlands,
one was not
have
a
had,
great chance.
Netherlands have had the bulk of the chances in this second half. Have at least evened up the XGs a little bit more, Jared, but still 1-1, and this feels like it is destined for.
What's your
extra
guess
time.
For how much stoppage time here? 4 minutes? I would say four. That would be my guess. I hope it's three, but I think it's going to be four. I don't think it'll be five. We haven't had that much injury in the second half.
There's not been. Yeah, we have a German ref. The German league notorious for not giving much stoppage time. In the German league, in the Bundesliga, if it's like 4-0, they just blow the whistle at like 89:55. They're like, take this team out of their misery.
I love that.
So
I hope
go
they
three.
Do that today. Oh, we got a break here. Oh, they called a foul in Netherlands. So you know what I've noticed over the last few minutes? It has gotten a little more physical. Especially with a couple of the set pieces, and the Netherlands have not been happy. In fact, Virgil van Dijk just got a yellow card for arguing with the ref on a corner decision, and the Netherlands did not like that decision either. It does feel like the frustrations are starting to boil over, and both teams are just kind of hoping that this gets to extra time.
Playing at the Lambeau Field of Germany, which is the Westfalen Stadion in Dortmund. There's a lot of, where this stadium is being played, Borussia Dortmund, there's a lot of Packer fan, Dortmund supporters who are Packer fans because it's very similar. It's kind of middle of nowhere, industrial portion of Germany. History abounds. Colors are kind of similar.
That's why they couldn't keep Erling Haaland.
Yeah, clearly, because of that.
So
anyway, I thought I would just give you, the co-shareholder, a little history.
What you're saying is that the Packers shouldn't be in Brazil. They need to be in Germany for their international games.
That'll be great.
Well, they do
would
go
you
to go, Germany.
Would
right?
you go to that if they
play
if they played it there?
Germany.
Well, what's hard is like
I can talk to your bosses and get you the day off.
I don't want to miss NFL action. Like the one to do it is actually this year because you're going on it's a Friday.
It's a Friday.
You just hang out. You're in Brazil.
Oh
my goodness! In the 91st minute, England do this every single match, and they've done it again. A 91st minute likely winner.
Should we give a goal call?
Oh, my goodness. I
said it, too. I said this is going to be devastating if they score in stoppage time.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Good for England.
They keep doing
because
this.
They just won the match. And bad for all of my bets. But you know what? We made it all the way to the 91st minute on 1-1, and we couldn't get home. Unbelievable.
That was something special. just can't believe that actually happened because this has been England in a nutshell. All tournament.
That was a tough beat. I honestly thought that was a win in my back pocket right there. I really did.
That's tough. You sweated out. This was 1-1 in the 18th minute. You sweated this thing out all the way to the 90th. Wow. And Ollie Watkins from a tight angle.
Reserve substitute. They brought him in for Kane about 5-10 minutes ago.
A smart decision for England, who look to be poised now to take on Spain in the final. Would be dueling 2-1s and no extra time. Wow. That was pretty incredible. 2-1 England. Wow. Okay.
Crushing my hopes of finishing this tournament profitable, although I'll have a chance now.
The draw was
I'll have a chance now. I was up like 3 units heading into today, and I just dropped like 2.5 on that.
All right. No faith still up.
I've got a chance now. You know what? I might just call it a tournament because I have England now to win in the future. So why am I going to press my luck? Either England, maybe I'll just bet Spain.
Spain to lift the trophy.
Either way, I end happy.
And you'll be, that'll be about, I would say, minus 110.
Probably. And I'll have a chance to either win that bet and finish profitable betting solo for the tourney, or I would have then 28-1 on the Phillies to win the World Series if England wins this tournament.
That's a nice ticket, I would say,
considering they're like 4-1 right now.
You're not doing anything, though, with Copa America.
I haven't bet one Copa match. I have a couple friends that have been giving out some bets on Copa. Here's the thing with me and Copa. I view the European game to be a little bit tighter, better drilled, better efficiency. I think the South American game to me is a little more wide open, and I think you get more crazier results. I think we've had like what, 2 or 3 teams score 4 or 5, right? Uruguay had like a 5-goal game. Like you just get these wild performances that are sometimes tougher to predict.
I'd say the gap too between
the haves and
the
have-nots.
bottom teams and the top teams are,
which breeds volatility,
very very wide.
Yeah. I think all the 32 here, I thought were kind of right in the same group.
Copa America group stage was the best way to take advantage of it.
Sure.
Because you had some teams like Bolivia that were just
really bad.
I mean, if the
U.S. beat them, then they must really stink.
Clearly. I have bet some Copa America, mostly playing unders early in the tournament when you had these bad nations kind of competing against each other, and it just became like a tackle fest. But unfortunately, totals were already low to begin with, and with a lot of unders to start in Copa America, there were also really bad field conditions across the NFL stadiums in the U.S. That played a role. But very early, Jared, by the second match day, a lot of the totals, at least, were down to flat 2s. Even some was 1.5, like we have tonight. Colombia-Uruguay from Charlotte with a total of 1.5. It's minus 175 to the over. But I felt like Uruguay was being a little bit disrespected in the market in general, just because they are in the U.S.'s same group. Mm-hmm. And as a result, not much attention was being pointed to Uruguay. But Colombia, in a similar sense, being in the Brazilian group, was also being a little bit overlooked. So it's really the two overlooked teams who are really, really solid squaring off. And it is fair that Uruguay, is the slightest of favorites here, but it is, for the most part, a pick'em with maybe slight leaning to Uruguay. As a result, no real edge for me here, and I'm not getting involved with a total that's this low to begin with.
No.
So it's a stay away for me on the Copa America match, but should be really, really entertaining tonight. Winner to face Argentina, who took out Canada 2-0 yesterday.
I'm going to laugh when Netherlands equalizes right here.
There were only 2 minutes of stoppage time. I told you, man, German refs, they don't mess around.
Although they probably gave him an extra minute because of the goal that happened.
Well, we're at 4 minutes already of stoppage time.
Yeah, I was going to say it right here. I think this is it. They're going to blow the whistle right here.
Jude Bellingham playing in his former home stadium of Dortmund.
Match over.
Where he became a star.
Good for England. I obviously am devastated for losing a bet at the death, as they would say.
At the death.
But I think England, based off of the run of play in this tournament, I think they have overcome. They have not looked the best, but they have, I think, overcome adversity better than any other team.
100%.
Based off of the situations they were in. And let's be honest, do you think if England does beat Spain, do you think anyone's going to look back and say how they did it? I don't think anyone's going to care. They're in the final.
We have 3 matches here. We're in a do-or-die situation. You came back from behind. It is final. England 2, Netherlands 1. England takes it in regular time. Total goes over at the death. In our final hour, we will talk with Zach Cohen on the Wimbledon. I will also break down some more NFL discussion with the NFC North and the Minnesota Vikings. That's up next here on Sharp Money.